You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio, as I just said, on the All Warrior Radio Network. And today we're talking about Beirut. And you're going to hear the comments of the author, Marine author, Eric Hamill. We spoke with him during the summer and on the subject of a number of books that he's written. He's written on The Chosen Reservoir. He's written on Guadalcanal. He's written on Beirut. He's, I want to say, 28 different books about the Marine Corps in his life. So he certainly has a bit of perspective. We spoke to him about Beirut. And I will tell you this. I mean, he and I spoke both on the record and off the record, and deeply affected by the research that he did, the Marines that he met, what happened to them, how they were treated. Here is Eric Hamill talking about Beirut. Eric, what about, I want to talk about your book, The Root. When I came up, I was in OCS when the building was blown up in Beirut. Talk about the key parts of that story, the way you wrote it.
Well, the first part was that I knew the people running 12th Marine Corps District here in the Bay Area, and one of them knew Tim Garrity, Colonel Garrity.
Right.
They served together in Vietnam. They were majors together. So he made a direct call to Garrity and said, "This guy's okay. Please give him the time of day." And I made arrangements to go to Camp Lejeune, pretty much at the mercy of the public affairs officer, and had an interview with Garrity, who was chief of staff of the division at the time, and actually running it while I was there because both generals were gone for the week. And I was told to stay around over the weekend, even though I finished my work, until Monday morning to have an outgoing interview with General Gray. But I got mostly to talk to the MSSG guys. That's what they had set up, and they were being watched the whole time, and they were obviously briefed on, you know, what to say and what not to say. And at the end of 3 or 4 days on a Friday evening, when everybody's heading, you know, to the Oak Club or wherever, a young lieutenant is standing beside me, in one of the admin buildings, the front door of the admin building. And he says, "You missed the most important part. The bombing was the most important part, but you missed everything leading up to the bombing, which was what the Marines called the September War. Through the entire month of September, 1983, the Marines were under fire from Shiite Muslim militias. They took casualties. We know about six Marines killed. We don't know, probably a couple of dozen or two or three score were wounded, some quite badly, in a war that for political reasons couldn't be acknowledged because the president was having an argument with Congress over the new War Powers Act. And if they were seen to be a war, then the Congress would have some say in what was going on in Beirut. So there's this political nonsense going on. I mean, to the point where the chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, John Tower, flew in to take a look around and to see the son of an important constituent, a senator from Texas. And the Marines actually called the Shiites, probably on public telephone, and told them to cool it for a couple hours while Tower was in town. That's the kind of stuff that was going on. That was the mind-blowing, eye-opening part of the battle. I mean, there was no, Jim Webb went as a correspondent, for McNeil Lehrer, and I remember watching him on television laying on his side, trying to crawl into his helmet, the rest of him, into his helmet, talking into his microphone under machine gun fire. The camera's behind one berm, and Webb is behind another berm. And I don't think it ever dawned on him that this was part of a continuing war. That's what a surprise it was. And his lieutenant spilled the beans to me. And when I was having my interview with General Gray, I told him what I discovered and that I wanted to follow up on it. And he said, he thought it over. He interviewed me hard. He asked tough questions. And he said, you have my blessing. 1/8's going to be at 29 Palms, which is at least closer to home, in April. And you're my guest. You go out there and you ask any question you want to ask. And when I got there, the battalion operations officer had a company in Beirut, and was very reticent to talk and even rubbing my face in it to some degree that he knew something I didn't know. I remember standing there telling the state snipers, this is Mr. Hamill, General Gray says, tell him anything he wants to know. And they immediately proceeded to tell me stuff that, believe me, I didn't want to know.
Life.
And I had to walk a line doing the book. I'll tell you something that I never told anybody in public before. I was actually invited to the White House for what I thought was an interview having to do with the Vietnam battle. But a senior Marine officer basically said, we'd like to look at your manuscript and make sure you don't make any mistakes. And I said, that's out of the question. And I was ultimately sabotaged because I told it the way I wanted to tell it without cooperating with the White House. I have a degree in journalism. It's the only journalistic endeavor I ever took in real time. And I think I conducted myself honorably under the journalistic canons. But I made some enemies, to put it bluntly. So there, breaking news.
Well, you know what?
Go ahead.
I have friends that were in Beirut, and I remember when I went back to teach at the basic school and the infantry officer course, one of my friends that was in Beirut brought their rules of engagement, the things they had to do before they could engage somebody. It was ridiculous. They had to give warnings in Arabic and French. And you see these things spelled out phonetically that they're supposed to yell, you know. And it was just the rules that they operated under were so ridiculous that it was heartbreaking, because ultimately you know where this ends up, which is in the barracks being destroyed, and just this crazy is not the right word for it, but this totally inappropriate use of these Marines in a situation where they're so hamstrung that they're not even allowed to defend themselves. They're not even trusted. You know, the sentry, you know, doesn't even have a weapon in the magazine when that vehicle goes by. And so you're reading it and you're looking and you say, how did you guys operate like this? And he just shook his head and said, you know, they were the rules of engagement. And he said, you know, we had the Israelis rolling around. They wanted to kill people, you know, and we were kind of in the middle of all this stuff. We're getting shelled by everybody. And he said, it was just, it was really hard. And he said, the rules of engagement, we would watch, the Shiite militiamen stock ammunition in a building all day, knowing good and well that they were going to shoot at us from that position at night.
Couldn't shoot unless they had a weapon in their hand, locked and loaded.
Yeah, and we'd watch them move ammunition, and they'd look at us, and then that night, you know, we knew sure as hell we were going to get engaged from there, and bigger than snot, we were. But those are the rules that we live by. Eric, I have a question. This is kind of a historical question. The United States does not seem to be able to solve how to use military force since World War II in an effective way to achieve its national aims. We seem to go down this road of we conduct a military operation, then we get done with it, and then things kind of unravel, and then we wind up leaving. And we've done that in Somalia, Lebanon, and Iraq and Afghanistan, or we're in the middle of it there. Is there any reason? Do we not understand the role of military power in our national strategic interest? And have we just forgot the lessons of the Marshall Plan and how long it takes to build these things as we embark on them?
Well, you don't build them by sending a destructive force in. You know, I mean, it's a threat. You don't go in with the carrot and the stick in one hand. You hold the stick back, and you offer the carrot. And I don't know how the Marine Corps itself got so screwed up in Beirut, because it was the party in the American Vietnam effort that did the med caps with General Walt. Lou Walt,
right.
You know, try to use the soft power of the military. You know, we have water units, army water units, ready to go anywhere around the world. They were in Rwanda, you know,
right.
Providing water. They were weaponless for all practical purposes. At least they didn't show their weapons. They went and they provided water. And that made friends. In Beirut, nobody knew what they were doing there, first of all. They had the vaguest possible directives from the National Command Authority, and then were basically forgotten there. I mean, they were put there and forgotten, except in this internecine, you know, law war over the War Powers Act. They didn't have constructive things for the troops to do. So they eventually turned to training the Lebanese army, which they found pretty sad. And they did what Marines, you know, really do best, which is train other Marines. And that looked like they were on the side of the Lebanese Christian government in the middle of a three-way civil war.
Right.
Not to mention the PLO and everything else that was going on.
Oh, man.
So it was. Well, the word negligence comes up. It was just a dereliction of duty on the part of people who were really running the show. There were also cross purposes. There were other things going on in the Middle East. And this is a demonstration of power in the Middle East. It became a demonstration of power. It was supposed to be soft power, and it was power. There's just way too much to explain in the four corners of this show or what time we have left, and I wouldn't even attempt to do it. But I'm in touch with a lot of the veterans of Beirut, actually on Facebook, to tell you the truth, and they're still suffering the consequences. I will tell you a fact. It's in my book. It's documented. It's going to upset you completely. But there was so much energy put into not acknowledging a war that was a war that initially the dead and the wounded Marines, American troops, were not awarded Purple Hearts.
What?
Not awarded Purple Hearts. It took screaming and yelling and carrying on by the Illinois Senator Charles Percy to get those awards. He embarrassed his own party and the Reagan administration into giving the dead and the wounded Purple Hearts. They were never given any treatment.
Make it stop. Make it stop. All right, if I told you, look, give me one lesson from Beirut, what would that lesson be?
Think before you act. Whatever your father tells his son.
Yeah, but we're talking about politicians.
Well, that's tough because it still needs to be think before you act.
Do you pay attention to politicians?
I pay attention because of those dangerous people on Earth.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? I mean,
it's like going through an intersection, in a busy intersection, with a blindfold on. Unless you're self-aware and you're, yeah.
moderately disturbing, you know, the last couple of days. You know, every claim that Hillary Clinton made relative to her class, her server, you know, the head of the FBI walks out and says, yeah, none of that is true. None of that is true. And the person probably most likely to be the president of the United States, you stand there looking like, are you kidding me?
Well, that's not what he said. What he said actually was, we couldn't win a court case.
No, well, no, he went on to, in his statement, he talks about, she said she had a server, she had multiple servers. She said she used one device, she used multiple devices. She said she never knowingly sent classified information. He says that's not true. And so, so you see her make a statement. My point is not to pick on her. I could put audio from Richard Nixon up just as well to illustrate the point, or her husband, to illustrate the point in that I don't know that they're capable of wielding the instruments of national power that are in the long-term interest, selling it to the American people and then staying the course and doing the right thing. I don't know that they think like that. And I look at this, and if you look at Vietnam, if you look at when we went into Somalia, when you look at when we went to Lebanon, or you look at Iraq, and you look at Afghanistan, we repeat this same cycle over and over and over and over again. And I don't know that American politicians, I don't know that they're up to the task of employing military might in an effective way that for the long-term best interests of the United States, because we get sick of it, and then we want to go home.
Well, there's a saying from Vietnam that we didn't have a 12-year war. We had a one-year war 12 times, which means that as troops cycled through, and especially commanders cycled through, they didn't listen to the lessons from the guy who they were relieving. It was a blank slate for them when they got there, so they had to go through the same mistakes because they didn't have a method for proper briefing. They didn't write down a doctrine.
Wow.
Yeah. They were subject to changes in the National Command Authority.
I will tell you that it's moderately discouraging when you look at the course of history and look at how ineffective we've been in the application of our military, the long-term effects of it. And so I just wanted your thoughts as a historian, because the more I look at it, scrutinize it, I think the more discouraged I get. And I don't know. I look at the future and say, okay, what changes Afghanistan? What changes the Middle East, where we're engaged right now? And I'm not sure that we're very good at it anymore. And if I look at history, I would quickly conclude that we're not very good at it. And Beirut is a glowing illustration of that. I mean, just awful the way they were treated, the way they were used. And then kind of, I would almost say when they came back, the way they were kind of hung out to dry a little bit.
Those guys were robbed. That's all I can say. I'm their advocate. That's something that's kind of fallen to me. Because they certainly had no advocates in government. They didn't have advocates in the command chain of the Marine Corps. They didn't.
Eric, first of all, thank you very much for taking time out of your day to talk to us. And honestly, a privilege to have such a prolific writer about the Marine Corps and such an interesting historian as yourself come on with us. And I appreciate your time, and hopefully we can do this again.
Well, this is the best part of my day. I won't even say so far. I'll just acknowledge that the rest of the day can't measure up.
Well, thank you very much. Eric, have a great day. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
Life in the military is one of service and sacrifice. For some, that sacrifice includes physical and mental injuries or trauma that will affect their lives forever. Please join with the American Legion in recognizing and supporting our wounded warriors and their families. We need to show them that we truly are a grateful nation. We cannot allow them to be forgotten and left to fend for themselves.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.